Hello there, and good day, everyone. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, and this is the program, The Teacher. I'm your host, Masood. During history, and especially at a golden age of development for science and knowledge in history of Islam, we will see the great contribution of Muslim scholars and scientists to the expansion and development of science and knowledge, a kind of contribution whose impact and influence on other modern time achievements of other scholars, non-Muslim scholars, Western scholars, and modern time scholars and scientists is very clear and can be easily observed, of course, by every one of us. And a simple look at history and reading about, you know, the history of development of science and knowledge. We're talking about at an age when a list of, you know, Muslim scholars and scientists grew to contribute and impact on different areas of science. You know, when we talk about Muslim scholars, usually it comes to our mind that, you know, they were experts in areas of humanities such as philosophy or epistemology and, you know, theology or, you know, areas like this. However, the fact is that their great contribution to other areas of experimental sciences, especially natural sciences, is very important. From physics and chemistry to medicine and astronomy, they were all, you know, experts in such areas, and they could build a kind of foundation in some of these sciences, a kind of basis which was built upon by other modern time scientists later on. So we're talking about the great contribution of Muslim scientists to natural sciences. So one of the areas of science, which was very important for Muslims, of course, even due to the religious rituals, is the field of astronomy. And one related field to that, which had some experts, you know, in that time among Muslim scientists, is the field of meteorology, which is the study of course, you know, weather and, you know, weather forecasting and things like this. It might look a little bit surprising for us to see that, you know, someone like a Muslim scholar was kind of expert or scientist in this field, you know, at that time, talking about a couple of centuries ago. But the fact is that it is true. And one of the greatest Muslim scholars that we're going to talk about today is Abu Hanifa Dinawari, who was a Golden Age polymath, who was expert in different areas of science, from astronomy to botany, agriculture, geography, and even meteorology. Brother Yasser Ibrahim talks about Abu Hanifa Dinawari's Book of Plants.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another one of our programs where we discuss the scholars of the past and the great Islamic scientists which have made our lives today easier. Today our discussion takes us to one of the greatest works on botany written in the Islamic era. That was the book Kitab al-Nabat, written by Abu Hanifa al-Dinawari. This work was made known by the German scholar Silberberg in a thesis published in Breslau in 1908, which contained a description of about 400 plants. However, what is described by Silberberg is just a small part of what has survived. That is just the two volumes out of the six. Also in 1986, Catherine Breslin translated and annotated into English the extant parts of this book. The Book of Plants, in fact, consists of two parts. The first part consists of a series of specialized monographs with titles such as the chapter on date trees, the chapter on boughs, the chapter on truffles, and so on. In these monographs, Abu Hanifa discusses the names of the pertinent plants, their qualities and uses of these plants, terminologies relating to the plant and their use, and the relations of the names and words to one another, and their derivations, that is, where have these names come from. The second part is an alphabetical list of the plant names and botanical terms that were mentioned in the monographic section. It is alphabetical in the sense that all words beginning with the same letter are lumped together in the same chapter. Otherwise, the arrangement within chapters is not alphabetical and does not seem to have any logical arrangement. Much of the information of the monograph section is repeated here. Apparently, Abu Hanifa simply wanted to offer an alternate arrangement for the convenience of his readers. The monograph section is, however, much more detailed. In the alphabetical section, Abu Hanifa often cut short the discussions referring the readers to the appropriate monograph. Some of the stuff that Abu Hanifa says in this book, for example, in his expose on the earth, he describes a variety of soils, explaining which is good for planting and its properties and qualities. Al-Dinawari also describes plant development from its birth to its death, including the phases of growth and the production of flower and fruit. He then covers various crops, including cereals, vines, and date palms, relying on his predecessors. He also explains trees, mountains, plains, deserts, aromatic plants, that is, those plants that have a smell, and the benefits of these smells. Woods, plants used in dyes, honey, and even on bees. Al-Dinawari also devoted one chapter to the classification of plants, that is, Tajnis al-Nabat, which he mentions in one of the volumes that has survived. But the work itself on the subject has also been lost. Al-Dinawari's Book of Plants also covers various other subjects, such as astronomy and meteorology. In this instance where we see Al-Dinawari speaks about soils and speaks about the qualities of the soil, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also speaks and gives us an example of where a good place to plant will give good plants and a bad place to plant will give bad plants. In discussing the human soul, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Al-A'raf, the 7th Surah of the Holy Quran, in the 58th verse says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم والبلد الطيب يخرج نباته بإذن ربه والذي خبث لا يخرج إلا نكدا كذلك نصرف الآيات لقوم يشكرون. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that the good land is vegetation comes out by the permission of its Lord. And as for that which is bad, it does not come out except sparsely. Thus do we paraphrase the signs variously for a people who give thanks. That is, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is telling us that a good place, one of the examples that we can take from this verse is the issue of childbirth. That if a child comes out from a good family, that produce will have a good upbringing and a good start to life. However, na'udhu billah, if that child is born out of zina, it will not have that good life. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not say it will be completely bad, but it will have difficulty in reaching the state as that child who has the ability to get to the goodness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala quicker. Hence we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bring our children up and to make our children come from this good land and make our children good products from good parents, inshallah ta'ala. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is the program The Teacher. Talking about the contribution of Muslim scientists to natural sciences, we came to talk about Abu Hanifa Dinawari, who is a polymath, an astronomer, a geographer, of course, a botanist, agriculturist, a kind of well-known scientist at the golden age of Muslim scholars and scientists who impacted on different areas of science very significantly, of course. However, Abu Hanifa Dinawari, who was expert, you know, in all these areas that I just mentioned, including astronomy and meteorology, he was also very well known for his expertise in botany and study of plants. That is why his most renowned book is The Book of Plants. But it is interesting to know that, you know, how a kind of a scholar and scientist such as Abu Hanifa Dinawari could relate different areas of his expertise to each other to produce more output for us. He was an expert in meteorology, which is the study of weather, and we know that how weather impacts the growth of plants on Earth. So at the same time, he was an expert in botany, and he could, you know, relate these two areas together. Besides this point, when we, you know, look at elements of different sciences, talking about meteorology, for example, we see that, you know, the elements and items, you know, in this science include items such as earth, sky, sun, cloud, and wind. All these together, you know, are studied in this science. So all these elements that I mentioned on this earth, they are doing their jobs very well. They are, you know, by the creation of Allah the Almighty, they are just, you know, running the earth and the universe. And, you know, everything is just doing the thing that it should do in its place. What about us? What about our duties, we humans on earth, we who have the free will, a kind of gift that God gave to no other creatures but us? Are we doing our duties well? Our duties towards each other, our duties towards ourselves, our duties towards God, our duties towards our religion, are we doing them well, just, you know, the same as these elements of earth, sky, sun, cloud, and wind that are around us and we study them, you know, to develop science? They are doing their job very well. Are we doing our job very well? I think it's time for all of us to think about this issue more and more.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
Thank you so much, everyone, for staying with the program The Teacher once again, and you are listening to IRIB English Radio. Hopefully, we'll have you again in the next episode of this program. Just don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Till next session, God bless you all. Have a nice time and goodbye.
كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من